You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight every weekday from around the racing world. It is Wednesday, November the 25th. It's set to get a bit colder in Great Britain over the next few days. It'll be hotting up on the track with the Fighting Fifth at Newcastle featuring the reigning champion hurdler Epatant. With the Ladbrokes Trophy at Newbury, I'll be talking to the trainer of the conditional, David Bridgewater, in a little while, and some wonderful action at Fairy House, spearheaded by the return of the brilliant mare Honeysuckle. So much to look forward to. As there is cautiously off the racecourse with that $40 million loan we talked about 2 days ago from the government to the sport, and the surprise return of spectators to the sport next week that we discussed at length yesterday. But I think we need to be careful about both of these positives. First of all, as reported in the Racing Post today by Bill Barber, not all racecourses are enthusiastic about taking a loan, worried about their profit and loss over the next couple of years. And second, and more pertinent again today, the return of spectators. Well, if the government, as we expect, put the whole country into tiers two and tier three at the end of lockdown, then half that story about up to 4,000 people being able to attend racecourses does not apply. So in that instance, it's worth asking, how will things really play out over the next few weeks? Conor McGinn, MP for St Helens North and co-chair of the All-Party Racing and Bloodstock Group, will join me very shortly. But first of all, Rishi Prasad. Rishi, do we need to proceed with a note of caution, do you think?
Well, Nick, I think that the positivity of the last couple of days is extremely understandable because the outlook for a spell has been pretty bleak. Long spell. And clearly there are some people who are in worse positions than others. The arrival of the, or at least the confirmation of £4 million in loans and grants for the sport is certainly a positive. The idea of racing, having crowds depending on what tier you're in, that's again positive. But I think it's a bit too soon to start thinking that the light is at the end of the tunnel. I think we need to be a bit more conservative in our approach. There's still so much uncertainty. Not just in the sport of racing, but there's so much uncertainty nationwide with regards to test and trace, with regards to a plan for the vaccination. We're still some way away from how that's going to unfold with regards to vaccination. So I think it's important just to hold our horses at the moment. I mean, in fairness, there are other jurisdictions. Say, you look at the situation in Ireland, and it's far more bleak when it comes to the return of racegoers for them. And you wonder about, what's going to happen to so many racecourses there. Just in general, I think anybody is willing to accept anything that's positive and really embrace it. But I think that there's still some way to go before we start thinking that things are actually truly getting better.
So in reality, looking beyond the headlines, how might the next 2-3 weeks play out specifically for racing and racecourses? Well, Conor McGinn, MP, is co-chair of the All-Party Racing and Bloodstock Committee in Parliament, is a huge racing fan, is also MP for St Helens, so is very close to racecourses who may be affected, Aintree, Haydock and so on. Conor, how do you see the next few weeks shaping up?
Well, look, I think what we're waiting for in St Helens and in Haydock is what most other race courses will be waiting for, which is to see which tier they're being assigned to. Now, if it's tier three, then clearly any pilots or return for spectators can't take place. But there is a huge difference between tiers one and two as well. Now, my indications I've received from government are that the whole country will initially be placed in tiers two and three. So I think we might work on that basis and we should know more. But look, I think racing is so well equipped, more so than any other sport, I think. And I liaise with a lot of them and they're all doing incredibly good work. But I just think we have got this right and we have our whole model been preparing for this over the previous number of months. So we're in a good place to start having spectators back. And I would hope, if it's possible, that we would be able to do that almost immediately. So from the 2nd of December onwards, looking into that first weekend.
Yeah, it does look as though Ludlow are full steam ahead to at least accommodate 500 or 600 people at their fixture next Wednesday. It looks as though ARC are making positive noises about Lingfield being able to stage a fixture, unless they happen to be in Tier 3, which looks very unlikely. From your point of view as an MP, what do you believe the thinking is behind not having any of the country in Tier 1 for the time being? That's led to a fair bit of head-scratching.
Look, I don't really understand the mechanics behind how government are making decisions. It all seems slightly haphazard to me, even in terms of the approach prior to the national lockdown, where it would have been much easier and better to do it earlier, say over half term, and we wouldn't then have had to go later and mean we're now looking into the mouth of Christmas with still no real idea of whether this tiering system is going to work or not. And it's a bit as well, I think, like the 5 days over Christmas where household mixing will be allowed. I'm not particularly sure that's been thought through either. But look, we're not out of the woods yet, and public health has got to come first. And I think in racing, we also need to be careful, because I've been a strong proponent and sometimes met with hostility from my fellow parliamentarians, and particularly in my own party, about getting racing back and getting us moving and allowing spectators to get through the gates again, because our sport survival depends on that. But I think it's inevitable that rural courses will benefit more from this, because the likelihood is they'll be in lower tiering areas. And we then have a responsibility, and people need to take a personal responsibility for this, about not travelling hundreds of miles from a Tier 2 or a Tier 3 area, which, you know, you're not advised to do and you're not allowed to do, to some of these rural race courses, and risk the ire of local people who will see all of these outsiders coming in from areas with higher infection rates. We need to be careful about that. We need to be careful about hospitality, and we need to see what the guidance and guidelines is for that, about what sort of activity can take place on the course during the meeting, when spectators are allowed back, around the sale of alcohol, around people's general behaviour. And of course, you know, the vast majority of crowds that go racing are impeccably behaved and go because they love the sport. But I just think, given that people have been shut away for months, we've all missed racing incredibly, we know how good a day out it is, we just need to manage all of those things in terms of public perception for the long term good of the sport.
Just going back to how this was being policed before the second national lockdown came, so how the tier system was being managed, there was quite a lot of devolution to local government, if you like. If that's the case again, do you expect that to have a significant impact on each and every race day and its ability to accommodate a crowd, irrespective of the tier that it happens to be in on a national level?
Well, I think a lot of that was optics and quite disingenuous from government about the idea that local leaders or regional mayors had anything like a substantial say over the rules that were imposed. They didn't. I mean, the regulations made it very clear about that. What they were charged with was implementing it in some respects. And so, look, I think we need to be realistic about this. These are national directives that are being issued by government, and that's where the decisions are made. But what I do think local authorities can do, and devolved administrations can do, is provide the infrastructure support that may be required from their local racecourses and other sporting venues. I mean, the irony for us in St Helens is we can have spectators back on the basis that we may move into Tier 3, Tier 2, just at a time when the rugby league season is finished, for example, which is of no use whatsoever to the club in the town. But I do think in terms of the decision that will be taken nationally, in terms of the implementation, it's really important local government, local authorities and Metro Mayors work closely with racecourses and also with other sports clubs in Merseyside, for example, Anfield and Goodison, as well as Aintree and Haydock, to make sure that spectators can return safely, but also to take the view that it is a good thing that we are allowing them back, and we should encourage it and support what are really important contributors to our local economies.
Now, just finally, Connor, there's a suggestion that the Welsh Grand National, the Welsh National, might move from Chepstow into England. So an iconic Welsh sporting event might move to England if the Welsh Assembly don't allow any spectators of any description. Do you think that's a sort of legitimate move on the part of the racecourse group?
Well, you'll have the woke liberal elite, as they're so often called, talking about cultural appropriation if you take the Welsh National away from Wales. And as an Irishman, I have some sympathy with that. But look, the serious point here is I love the Welsh National and I love Chepstow. My wife is from Abergavenny. It's a beautiful part of the world. When we get the weather to go ahead with it, it's a fantastic day out. But if the choice is between having the Welsh National behind closed doors, where it's making no contribution to the economy in that part of the world and where people aren't allowed to see it, I think it's reasonable enough to say let's move it to a course close by. You've got Hereford, you'll have other possibilities too, where people can enjoy it. But look, the onus here is not on the course or on the arc. The onus here is on the Welsh Government to come forward with a plan to allow spectators to be able to go to Chepstow, even if they have to be in very limited numbers. And look, I'll be working with the course and with ARC and the local MP, David Davis, who's very supportive, to say to the Welsh Government, let's see what we can do to keep the Welsh National in Wales.
Connor, thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Nick.
Connor McGinn there. And I think, Rishi, there's no doubt that in the next 4 weeks, there'll be lots of smaller debates going on in various corners of racing as to who needs what money, where, who can let what crowds in at what day, under, you know, what auspices from which health authorities, and so on. It's going to be an interesting journey, that's for sure.
It sounds like it might be a little bit messy as well, Nick, as you rightly allude to. The fact is that the word uncertainty just hangs over so much of what's to come, whether it's to do with where you can have crowds back, what particular areas of the country that you won't and will, and what the impact of that may have. Also, you know, with regards to who is going to access the 40 million, what's going to be the criteria, what evidence are you going to have to prove in order to access that money? You know, what's going to be the system of checking all the details? It's going to be a very difficult thing to do, just simply because it's going to be a huge task. But hopefully, the right people are in place to get the job done. The only thing I'm really keen on people is just not getting carried away that we are in a much better position heading into the end of the year. I think that the idea has been all year long that we would hope that by the end of 2020 things will start to look better, and it is to a degree. It is looking a little bit better. But I'm worried that we may get carried away. That's not, I'm not just saying about racing. I'm talking about things like the fact that we're coming out of the second lockdown next week, and people might suddenly drop the bridle a little bit. And what's going to happen if they do? We need to be really vigilant in order to protect the future. We need to be vigilant now.
And how do you react to the suggestion that I put to Connor and that he ran with, that the Welsh National could be moved to England if the Welsh Assembly didn't allow any spectators at sporting events?
I wonder how the Welsh Assembly would react to that particular suggestion.
It's quite an overtly an interesting political shot across the bow from a racecourse ownership group, isn't it?
It is. It's a significant one. But this is the sort of situation I feel that we were always destined to be in, by the fact that we've had no crowds, there is no money, there is no income from that commercial aspect of racecourses. So people are in a position where they are perhaps acting out of their comfort zone, like, for example, a racecourse group suggesting that they may have to move a major race outside of one particular jurisdiction. To use the word threat might be a bit strong, but in a sense, you can understand why people are moved to that sort of position, because things are very difficult, and in order to try and coerce, maneuver, position yourself in a position of strength to get things back up and running for your own benefit is almost inevitable in these tough times. So I can understand why they've done that, or why they would suggest that, but I don't know whether it's going to work or not.
Well, time to check in now with trainer David Bridgewater, who trains one of the joint favourites for the Ladbrokes Trophy this weekend in the conditional. It sounds like you might be washing him down right now, Bridgie.
I am, literally. Yeah, he's just done his last bit of work and he's just flown up there, so I'm really excited.
How much work would you do with a horse like him before a race like this? I mean, in the immediate days before a race like this, give us an indication as to what his regime's been like.
We haven't got sort of miles and miles of endless gallops like they have in Lambord, so you have to be careful what you do there, because you can overwork horses on great expanses of gallops, and we've only got a short gallop, a little bit Martin Pike, Nigel Twiston Davis type gallop. So it's short, sharp work, really, so you can never really overdo him, you know. And he's a very clean-winded horse, and he seems to thrive off it anyway, Nick, so I'm really happy with him.
And I suppose it's a fine balance, because you're trying to get him absolutely tuned to run the race of his life, but you've got to do it all at home, because we're so early in the season.
Yeah, and I'm not a great person for race course gallops and all that sort of nonsense, because you can, like I say, you can overdo it a little bit. He's ready to go. I mean, his first time out, obviously, from this season. I mean, first time out last season, it was at, I think we started at Worcester. Well, Worcester and Newbury, it couldn't be a million miles apart, so... obviously he's improved a fair bit since then, and I like to think that physically he's a bigger horse and stronger horse this season, so whether that means he's better, I don't know, but he's been working really, really well, Nick, but it's his first time around the Hennessy and all the Ladbrook. I'd like to see our horses in better form. You know, they've been running okay. I mean, whether perhaps they're just not good enough, Nick, and I'm expecting too much from them. I don't know, but I'd like to see them in slightly better form. But it is what it is. He's in great nick, and it's the right race for him. So we'll have a good go.
Now, your glasses is normally half full. You're normally an optimist. You see the best in your horses. You expect plenty of them. But when this horse came to your stable, even though he had some useful form, could you have imagined he'd have improved quite as much as he has?
When we got him, you always hope. You're hoping more than anything in this game. It doesn't matter how much money you spend on horses, you need a massive chunk of luck. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like with JP spending all that money on that horse the other day. He's going to need luck. You know, it doesn't matter how much you spend. And, yeah, I mean, he was. I thought he was. I knew he was a Cheltenham Festival runner when we bought him. That's what I did know. I did know that. I didn't expect him to win the Cheltenham Festival because we didn't pay the money that would entitle you to win at the Cheltenham Festival. If you know what I mean. So that was a nice surprise. He's always been a Grand National horse for me. If he goes and outruns his. What I think he'll do on Saturday, you know, I mean, I'm not expecting him to go and win. If he's improved and he goes and finishes in the frame or goes and does something silly like win, then we'll have to think about bloody Gold Cups and stuff like that. But, you know, let's get him started on Saturday and we'll go from there. But he is in great nick. So, you know, that's one thing for certain.
And of course, you've got very close to winning a Cheltenham Gold Cup before with the Giant Bolster, who ran in it several times and was placed multiple times. Is it sacrilege to start putting them in the same breath or not?
The Bolster never did anything at home. He was never a good horse. He was never a good horse at home, but he went to the races and sprung to life, which is always the best way to have it. Because, you know, we so often get these horses working like good horses at home in the mornings and then do nothing on the racetrack. So he was a pretty one-off. Whereas this horse is always... This has always given you a nice feel at home, the conditional. You've got to step up a little bit. I mean, you know, with this fellow, I would say he's a little bit one-paced. You know, he can go a gallop, and in most of his races so far, he's always been the last off the bridle. You know, he does travel really well in his races, which will be a great asset to him. And of course, he stays. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think physically he's better horse than he was last year, but, you know, that obviously isn't always the case when they get to the course.
Well, best of luck, Bridgie. Thanks for talking to me.
Top man, Nick. Thank you.
David Bridgewater there. Rishi, looking forward to Newbury this weekend.
I am indeed. I'll be in the studio for Racing TV. I think you're on course, so we'll be chatting to each other from a distance, hopefully. It's a very good race, perhaps not quite the strength and depth of previous years, the Ladbrokes Trophy, but nonetheless, it is very competitive, and I'm not adamant about anything in the race yet.
And could you give the conditional a chance?
Absolutely. I think he's an obvious chance, which is why he's near the top of the market. You know, tremendous season last season. I always felt that he would, I think David Bridgewater said it last season himself, that he could get stronger. You know, he's clearly a very good horse. He travels really well. Tremendous effort in the race last year. And obviously at Cheltenham, he was brilliant. Very strong. And I think the form is strong of his win at Cheltenham. And I wonder, this year's race, how does it compare, you know, in your head, for example, Lucky, to last year's race? I don't think there's much difference in it.
Not a huge amount of difference, I don't think. I think the one thing with these big staying chases, they tend to be run at a good gallop. So, yes, you do need to stay, but also you don't need to be too, you don't want to be too far out of your ground either, which is why, I think a horse like Two for Gold is quite an interesting runner here. Mm. Because he's a horse who likes to get on with it. He does jump well. I mean, he might not be a cast iron stayer, but with not that much rain in the forecast, I could see him running well. Would have been a difficult choice for David Bass between him and Vindication. And the horse who's really well handicapped in the race, I think, is Black Op. But the question with him is whether he can be more fluent and slicker over his obstacles than has sometimes been the case over fences.
Yeah, I agree about Black Op. Obviously, he was a very, very good hurdler. It's been a while. It's taken him a bit of time to get into his stride over fences, but I still don't think, like you point out, that he's quite slick enough yet for a race like this. You can't afford to make too many mistakes. And having said that, the horse I quite like is Copperhead of Colin Tizard's, who's failed to complete on his last two starts. But he's a prominent racer, and he actually thumped Two for Gold at Ascot last year when he looked really progressive. Obviously, Colin Tizard's got a very good record in the race as well. And he's a young horse, Copperhead, and that's what sort of swayed me in his direction.
Big weekend for Aidan Coleman, Epatant and Paisley Park. Epatant in the Fighting Fifth and Paisley Park one day before in the long distance hurdle at Newbury. So he's got two race courses, two big races, the two best hurdlers trained in the UK, arguably.
Indeed, yes. Epatant, thankfully, I was able to see her up close at the Newbury Gallops morning recently, and she was the best worker on the day. Not that hard, in fairness, because not too many had very stressful times, and one or two needed it. But she looked razor sharp. She looked ready to go, and she was very enthusiastic from the moment she arrived in the paddock. I think it'll take a very good horse to lower her colours at any point during this season. Paisley Park, I interviewed Emma Lavelle that morning at the Newbury Gallops, and I said to her that I thought he had strengthened up even more than when we last saw him at Cheltenham. And she said, "You're being very polite." Or is that your polite way of saying that that he's still got to lose a couple of pounds? Clearly, the run's going to bring him on a little bit. And in McFabulous, he's got a serious contender. So he'll have to be close to razor sharp, I think, to see off McFabulous. And I think it'll be a good race. I'll be keen to see what he looked like in the paddock on Friday.
And before we leave this weekend's action in the UK alone, and I'll be talking with Jane Mangan tomorrow about all the good stuff from Fairy House this weekend, I want to alert everybody to an important fundraising evening that you're hosting, Rishi, in aid of the Injured Jockeys Fund.
Yes, there's the Ladbrokes Winter Carnival preview evening on Thursday night, starting at 7 p.m. It's raising money for the Injured Jockeys Fund. Obviously, Ladbrokes, Newbury and Just Seats all supporting it. Going to have Tom Siegel, Dan Skelton, David Bass, Simon Clare all on. A couple of special guests coming on later at the end of proceedings. So we're raising money for the Injured Jockeys Fund. We're going to go through the majority of the races, hoping that between us we'll all be able to pick out a few winners. We'll have obviously the usual charity selections, which I think last year did okay, if I remember correctly. It's on the Newbury Facebook page, so hopefully a lot of people will be able to join in and enjoy it.
So as racing continues, COVID notwithstanding, so too does the apparently interminable bloodstock sales season, which is continuing this week at Tattersalls with a very important catalogue of foals, slightly reduced but full of quality, and also thereafter the big mare sale as well, where you'll see some big money changing hands. On this podcast platform, we've been very happy to bring you 6 episodes so far of the Bloodstock Bulletin from Tattersalls. Episode 7 will be released by us tonight, and here's a taste of what you can enjoy. Your host, Gina Bryce, talking to breeder Nick Pocock.
Well, Nick, we're looking ahead to the December sales, the foals and the mares, and of course, one of the really exciting mares to have come out of the December breeding sale in the past has been Sitara for your operation, Stringston Farm. Just tell us a little bit about the story of how you managed to purchase her back in 2002.
She was very much my parents' choice of mare. I can't take too much credit for her. She just appealed to my father, as actually they thought was going to be a fast type of mare. They didn't ever thought that she was going to produce the middle distance horses she has. And the family came alive as soon as we bought her, and it's just been a family. Every year there's been group winners every year, and it's just been a dream, really.
And I read an article that suggested it was a half a herd of cattle that you had to thank for the money raised to buy her. Is that right?
Yeah, we sold one of the two herds of dairy cattle at that point. And yeah, the parents came up with a quarter of the money up to the sales, bought two mares and a foal in their place. And the two mares have been the dream start, really. They now... half of the broodmares at home are related to either Sitara or Divine Grace.
Nick Pocock there talking to Gina Bryce, and you'll be able to hear the full episode 7 of the Tattersalls Bloodstock Bulletin on this platform later on this evening. Time now to turn our attention to matters in Hong Kong and important news about the Hong Kong International Race Day that takes place at Sha Tin on Sunday the 13th of December. Aidan O'Brien has nominated a 5-strong squad for that, and they include the Breeders' Cup winner Order of Australia for the mile, together with stable companion and third placing in that race Lope E. Fernandez. Very excitingly magical. One more go for her this season. Anyway, we don't know what happened after that. She will run in Hong Kong together with the other filly Peaceful, and Mogul, a long season coming to an end for him too. With more news about Hong Kong and particularly a good card at Happy Valley today, let's cross now to our correspondent in Hong Kong, J.A. McGrath.
Hi, Nick. A very attractive Wednesday meeting at Happy Valley this week. But before going there, let's just recap on what we learned on Trials Day at Sha Tin last Sunday. First lesson learned, the Derby winner from last March, Golden 60, is heading for Horse of the Year honours. I know it's a long way to go, but after trotting up in the Jockey Club Mile, it will take something very special to beat him in the Hong Kong Mile at the Big Internationals on December the 13th. We also learned that Tony Cruz has a couple of aces lined up for the big ones. Fiori, who beat stablemate Exultant in the Jockey Club Cup. We know that Ferrari will head now for the Hong Kong Cup, while Exultant, who looked a bit one pace this time, will be more comfortable tackling the mile and a half of the Vase, which he won 2 years ago. And yes, I was very mistaken in writing off Hot King Prawn in the Jockey Club Sprint. But he won't know what's hit him when he comes up against classic legend, winner of the Everest, in the sprint in December. More of that another day. Now for the Wednesday card. Can you believe that Casper Founds is now 7 wins clear of his rivals in the Trainers' Championship, and that Joe Moreira is 15 clear of arch rival Zach Purton in the Jockeys' title race? I know it's early doors, but they are stunning figures. Let's put them both together for the best bet. A horse called The Rock in the finale. Race 8, number 2, a Class 3 handicap over 1650 metres, which is about 1 mile and 50 yards. The Rock is a very promising type. He was bought out of Clive Cox's Lambourne Yard following a nice win in a Windsor Novice over 1 mile. In new surroundings, he's already won at Sha Tin. Now he tries Happy Valley for the first time. You might like to throw in number 8, Toy Coon, for a bet on the Toad Swinger. So that's it, the magic man and the king of the valley combining. Now that's the perfect way to end any meeting at Hong Kong's famous city course.
Thanks to Jim and thanks to all my guests this morning, particularly Rishi, who's going to give you a winner.
I'm going to go for Friday at Newbury, Lucky. That very good novices chase, the one that's thrown up Denman and Bobsworth, etc. On Friday. Fiddler on the Roof. I know he only won narrowly at Exeter last time where he beat Silver Hallmark, but I think the runner-up is very, very good. He beat McFabulous over hurdles, and they were miles clear of Sporting John. And I know people are saying Sporting John didn't run up to his best, which he probably didn't, but I think we saw two very, very good horses, and Fiddler on the Roof was having his second start over fences, and I think he's just going to get better and better. So I'm hoping that he can win again.
Perfect, Rishi. Thanks so much. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this podcast, please tell your friends, give us a rating, review us, and subscribe on all reputable podcast providers. That was Wednesday, November the 25th. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. Thank you.